across central Wisconsin, people are tuning in and sounding off. Call in now. 715-845-2155. WSAU Feedback on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Thanks for sticking around 7 minutes after 8 o'clock as we jump into feedback. Thank you. We are going to do the second part of a two-part that we started yesterday, talking about the economy, specifically talking about the quantitative easing issues. Yesterday, we went into a bit of detail, and yes, I heard some of you snoring. I heard you're supposed to be taking notes. Went into a little bit of detail about what exactly is the policy of quantitative easing. It is the situation where the Federal Reserve is printing money at the tune of $85 billion a month and using that phony money to go over to the Treasury Department and purchase government securities, Treasury bills. You've heard them referred to on the news as T-bills, etc. That is financing and funding our over-budget spending. That's called monetizing the debt. This is what we're doing. We also discussed yesterday that the reason it's going on and the reason it's being perpetuated is that the design of the quantitative easing program was to get banks to ease up on their restrictions and ease up on their lending practices and get money into the economy. Well, the banks learned their lesson, and the banks got slapped around for easing their lending policies, especially in the housing market, and were to blame a lot for the housing bubble, the fact that they were giving loans to people who didn't qualify. They were being forced by the government, pressured by the government to do that. The banks have said, yeah, no, we're not doing it. Well, the positive result of the quantitative easing situation is the stock market is going up. The stock market values are going up. Wall Street says, okay, values are going up. As long as the government continues to pump money into the system, the stock is going to continue to go up. Industrial investors are jumping in like crazy, and they're riding this gravy train. Last but not least, we said, okay, when the unemployment rate nears 7%, you're going to see the quantitative easing begin to slacken. They're going to start tapping the brakes on this spigot of money. And probably when it hits 6.5%, which is going to become the new government norm for unemployment, they're going to turn the tap off altogether. At that point, between the slowdown and the shutoff of quantitative easing, you're going to see a huge correction in the stock market. All right. That's what we talked about yesterday. So that explains the what, that explains the how, and that explains the who. The question is now the why. The why. And this is where I am going to admit to you that this is my theory on the circumstance. This is my take on the why. To begin with, we have to look at the circumstance in a vein of common sense. If you look at our budget, we're spending more than we're making. We have been spending more than we make for a very long time. Now, in a controlled environment, that can be quite beneficial. Let's use the home budget as an example. If you have $250,000 in an investment that's earning, I don't know, 5, 6%, and if you have an old guaranteed annuity, then it's quite possible you could be earning a guaranteed 5%. So does it make any sense for you to take that cash out of your asset and spend it to buy a home, to pay cash for a house, when you could go to the bank, borrow that $250,000 and get an interest rate that is below the 5% that you are earning? Now, I know interest rates now are up and over that, but there was a time when interest rates were well below. So for the sake of argument, using someone else's money at a lower interest rate than you are earning on that same amount of money is beneficial to you. That is a smart move, especially when you take into fact the tax incentives, the tax breaks that you get for the interest on the house, and other benefits that it allows for retirement planning. Now, I have no desire or interest to go in down that road. You're just going to have to go with me on this. So that's my example of sometimes using other people's money. Borrowing money is an advantage to you, and it's the same for the United States. There are times when it is an advantage for us to have deficit spending. When there is, it's an advantage to use other people's money for our gain. But it has to be limited, it has to be strictly controlled, and it has to be very, very, very closely watched, because it can get out of hand very quickly. Now, the gentleman we talked about yesterday, whose op-ed piece was in the Wall Street Journal, mentioned that the reason he was apologizing for his policies, being involved in the policy of quantitative easing, is the government basically just went nuts with it and began this bond buying spree. It's like free money spigot was turned on and people just went nuts and were not acting responsibly with it. They were just spending like an entire drunken navy. Why? Why? Why would you do this? If your economy is such that you are spending more than you're making on a regular basis, what is the incentive to do it? Yesterday, I gave an example, a family. They are meeting and negotiating about their budget, and one spouse just continues to spend money, continues and continues, and racks up credit cards and drives the family deeper, deeper, deeper in debt. At some point, you got to get together and go, what are you doing? Are you intentionally destroying our family? Are you completely ignorant of how money works? Are you stupid, or are you implicit in a plan to harm us? That's the question. All right, let's go to the phones real quick. Thanks for calling. What's your name?
Lou.
Lou, what can we do for you, buddy?
Hey, I have a question for you, Seth.
Yes, sir.
Talking about the money going to government. I had heard, and maybe you can say you maybe heard the same thing too, where the government or Obama administration is trying to get some of their fingers in our retirement funds, our 401ks, the money we have in the bank, and pay us an interest rate. I'm going to hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
You're very welcome. That is not a new strategy. That has happened many, many, many times. The Clinton administration tried to get legislation initiated that would allow individuals to be taxed on the death benefit of life insurance and the cash value growth within life insurance. At the current situation, if you have a life insurance policy that builds cash value over the life that you own the policy, access to that cash can be done tax-free. Growth of those assets can be done tax-free. And the government saw billions of dollars being utilized, and the temptation was to get in there. Now, this was a very good example of a lobbying group for the insurance firms put pressure on Washington and said, no, you're not taxing these assets. It's not going to happen. So, the government is always, always, always looking at what assets are out there, how can they tax it to increase their revenue. What they should be doing is looking at what's going on in their own house and what stupid, ridiculous spending are they doing, and cut that instead. But no, the attitude is spend, spend, spend. Nancy Pelosi has said, quote, that there's nothing left to cut. There is nothing left to cut. The cupboards are bare. And that most of Washington on the left is saying, we do not have a spending problem. We are not out of control in our spending. Keep in mind, the government is printing and monetizing our debt to the tune of $85 billion a month.
The government doesn't control the Federal Reserve. There are some that suggest they should, but they don't.
The Federal Reserve is printing the cash. The phony money is being taken to the Treasury in order to buy bonds to fund our deficit spending. And you don't think there's any influence in the Obama administration in all this? It completely is. WSAU, we're going to take our first break. We'll be right back. 715-845-2155. We're going to delve into why is this happening next.
Be the first to know when school's closed. Text SCHOOL to 39327 and get school closing alerts from the WSAU newsroom from AM 550, FM 99.9, and WSAU.com.
Welcome back to Feedback 822. Okay. You know the old saying, if it walks like a duck, if it looks like a duck, if it sounds like a duck, chances are it's a duck, especially if it hangs out with other ducks. It's probably a duck. All right, so, as I promised, we're going to start talking about why is the government seeming to be oblivious to the dangers of spending more money than we have. I bring to your attention a gentleman by the name of Wayne Allen Root. He's done quite a bit of writing in various publications. He's done op-ed pieces.
Didn't he run for president at one point in time?
I believe he may have run.
Under like the Constitution Party one of the little parties?
Yeah, and that's cute. Go ahead, be demeaning a little bit better. I mean, if you're going to do it right.
Well, come on. It's anyway, not these parties had any chance of winning the presidency.
Wayne Allen Root, his claims is that he went to Columbia University with Barack Obama. He says that he was a college classmate of Barack at Columbia University, the class of 1983. He said that he was easy to recognize, that out of a class of 700, he was the lone conservative. I don't know about the lone conservative, but I'm pretty sure he was in the vast minority.
He was a vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party in 2008.
Can you say it with just a little more disdain in your voice? I'm not quite getting that whole, I'm a socialist.
Well, at least
the
Libertarian Party is at least not as ridiculous as some of the other small parties.
Ridiculous is beautiful. I love the way you're phrasing that.
Okay.
That's great. You're staying true to form.
All right.
He says that while he was at Columbia, he and Barack Obama were both political science majors. They were both in the pre-law program. They both graduated on the same day, and there was about 100 to 150 students in the political science department. He says he's pretty sure he knew almost all of them, and he goes on to say he's very sure that they all knew him, because he was basically the lone conservative. Now, Mr. Root also says he never met Obama, never saw Obama, never even heard of Obama.
Uh-huh.
Not one of his friends at Columbia ever met him. At their 30th class reunion in May of this year, not a single classmate had ever met him either. And none of them remembered him.
You know, this has been debunked by Snopes.com.
No, that's not true. They also have, the Snopes.com uses a reference to one college professor at Columbia that claims to know Obama, and that's not real hard to figure out, okay? By the way, Snopes.com is not entirely all that trustworthy. They're run by liberals, too.
Okay, sure.
So anyway, yes, there was one professor at Columbia that claims that they knew Obama. One.
And students. And
no,
there are no students. And the university itself.
Okay, give me names and we'll go from there. Anyway, Mr. Root's claim is that nobody that he has talked to knows who he was, knows anything, does not remember him, the teachers don't remember him, the professors, etc. That's not the issue. This is the issue. He's making the assertion that most of the people that were around him. Now, this is Mr. Root and his claim about the classmates around him, not about Obama. Most of the classmates proudly called themselves socialists, Marxists. Many of them came from wealthy families. They ended up hating the rich, maybe because of that. They despised business owners. and they talked about how it was imperative that they destroy the white power structure, that business owners needed to be bankrupted, capitalism must be dismantled, and everything on their mind was basically social justice. Take from those who have and give to those who have not. Does that sound familiar? Barack Obama was raised in a family that hated imperialism. They saw how the British had ruled their empire. They saw how the British came in, arguably were brutal to the people of the areas that they ruled over, that they took their resources and manufactured from the resources, sold the goods, didn't really give a lot back to the colonies that they oversaw. That's the negative side of it, of course. The reality of it is that many of the people that had the opportunity to do something with the resources they had chose instead to be laborers and not leaders. But anyway, so Mr. Root is making the assertion that a lot of the student body at Columbia were very much anti-American dream, anti-capitalism, and were very insistent that there had to be a fundamental change in the way things were done. As a matter of fact, many of them followed the writings of former Columbia professors Richard Cloward and Francis Piven. Their desire was to bring down the American capitalist system. Now, this is Cloward and Piven. Their writings were very clear that this is what they wanted to do and how they would do it. Cloward and Piven taught in their writings that in order to bring down the capitalist system, you must overwhelm it with massive spending, entitlement programs, and debt. That eventually causes the economy to collapse, taking out the middle class, and brings America basically to its economic knees. Therefore, once that is accomplished, who is the only source that can ride in on the white horse and save America from total destruction? That's right, the government. This is not, what is happening to our economy is not an accident. It is not because of the incompetence of a community leader. It is not because the people in the White House don't understand economics. It is intentional. It is deliberate. And right now, it's successful.
Breaking news, severe weather. Hear it on AM 550, FM 99.9 WSAU.